How's the weather in California?
It's hot again.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Everybody doing okay?
Yes. How are you doing?
I hear Aggie on the phone.
And Kathy Smith.
Hi, Kathy.
Morning, Reed. It's Bill.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing great. How's everybody?
Good.
I'm doing good.
That sounds like Aggie's voice.
It's good to be up and alive. Everybody, that's enough about that. Now, you working out today, Bill? You gonna play some tennis?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. So, I'll just give people another second here to get on the line. But I do have some good questions this morning. I'll try not to throw any loops at you, Bill, but sometimes I get emails like 2 minutes before the session. So we'll just go over them and everything will work out great, right?
Oh, absolutely. I like that same game you do, Reed. Stump the nutritionist.
Yeah, my favorite thing. So also, you guys, just while we're waiting for a sec, I just sent out to everybody a kind of an alert. I think there's things, and Bill and I pass these back and forth a bit. I think it's really important that we as a body support the organizations who are fighting and literally fighting against Big Pharma and the people who would otherwise take away supplements, you know. I'm not sure, is David Brassey on the phone? David will be on. He's from England, and they're really having a hard time over there getting the DHEA and the pregnenolone and the progesterone stuff. I mean, things that are on the shelves here that you can buy in the grocery store are prescription only over there. And although you know, there are some sources left in England and other parts of the UK, except for like Australia. In Australia, I can't even really go teach FDN there. You know, it wouldn't be fair really to teach FDN if they can't use the product. So it's holding back our, you know, kind of what we want to accomplish, which is get people on natural health solutions. So I think the more that we do as individuals and as a body to support, you know, to write our congressmen, write our senators, write the FDA. So I sent everybody a link this morning, and it makes it so easy. All you do is click the link, put in your name, address, and your email address, and then just hit send. And there are people at work working for us that will help try to keep the products that we need to use on the shelves, because there's a real movement. And I'm not a political guy and all that stuff. You know, I just try to keep my nose to the grindstone. I work very hard for my clients and for my students. And I just wish that government would leave us alone. But, you know, they're really trying to take our stuff away from us. So if I send you something like that out, or if you get something like that, and it's one of those easy links, I'm all for sending, you know, some support for what we do. Everybody get that?
Yep.
Hey, Reed?
Yes.
This is Dodie. I just wanted to say in California, it now says on progesterone and many of the labels that it causes cancer. So that's another big problem. It isn't just that we can't get it, but what they are putting on the label.
Yeah, which is false. I mean, I don't get that, you know. I never heard of it causing cancer. Matter of fact, Dodie, isn't progesterone the best counteraction for estrogen, which is the true sort of carcinogenic, or, you know, of the hormones. Isn't that right?
Well, absolutely. But if you knew the story behind all of that, it's pretty tragic. It's all at USC, and there are a bunch of scientists that are working for companies trying to get estrogen back on the market, and that's where it all started. So it's a very tragic story, and we really need to educate people.
Yeah, it's great. So also, to those of you who don't know, this is Dodie Anderson, your metabolic typing teacher, for most of you on the phone. So, Dodie, I'm really happy you're on the phone and let us know. And fantastic. So you'd agree that we need to be supporting that stuff. And it takes 5 minutes, you know, if you get those emails, pass it out to the rest of us, and let's all do what we can. You know, if you can't donate time or money, you can at least pass the word around and support those people who do make it their business to write our crooked congressman.
Right, absolutely, 100%.
Okay, well, I'm really glad. Did you get Bill a job?
Oh, yeah. We're still working on it. That's my retarded son who is having some difficulty, and we're changing jobs. So for any of you who live in different states, I guess the laws are very different.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. It's,
so we're working on it, but thank you for asking.
Yeah, sure. He's a cool kid. Here's a question that I think is one of just a great question, and Bill, you're going to have to answer this one. A question was, how
I'll
much
defer to Doty.
What's that, Bill?
I'm going to defer to Doty, depending on what the question is.
Okay. Well, you said you wanted to play Stumper, metabolic typing nutritionist.
Yeah, I did.
Now, how much importance or influence or effect does the subdominance have on a given metabolic type?
Fortunately, that's an easy one. I can answer that one, okay?
Yeah.
The subdominant is really there for background information for you as an advisor. The dominant system is the one that dictates how nutrients and foods behave. So no matter what the subdominant system is, that doesn't change those rules, which are laid down by the dominant system. So if you're an oxidative dominant person, then in your metabolism, calcium is going to produce an alkaline shift because it will slow down the oxidation rate. So no matter if you're a sympathetic or a balanced or a mixed subdominant, that doesn't make any difference. The rules are still in place based upon the dominant system, which in this case would be the oxidative system. However, depending on the configuration of the dominant type and the subdominant type, that can alert you to issues or problems that could develop early on when on the program. For example, in the non-classic types, the sympathetic fast or the parasympathetic slow, as you all well know, those have opposite influences in the body or react oppositely to nutrients when one or the other of those systems is dominant. So in the sympathetic fast, if you give potassium to a sympathetic, it will slow down metabolism. It'll cause an alkaline shift by stimulating the parasympathetic system. But in a fast oxidizer, it does the opposite. It speeds up the oxidation rate and causes an acidic shift. So in that particular non-classic type, the sympathetic fast, and let's say this person is a sympathetic dominant, knowing that their subdominance is a fast dominant, and that if that happened to become the dominant system, nutrients would have an opposite effect than they would in the sympathetic dominant. That alerts you to any problems that could develop early on, because in that particular metabolic type, if that is not the genetic type, and is a functional type, which is due to imbalances that have been created along the way, then as the person moves back into their genetic type, it's very likely that they will shift metabolic types. So the sympathetic dominant, because they are taking potassium nutrients, and if that sympathetic dominant has a subdominant fast oxidative type, then they can more readily shift into that subdominant system as time moves on. So even though the dominant system is the one that dictates how foods and nutrients behave, and even though the subdominant system does not affect that, the subdominant system can give you information about that person in terms of how they likely will change as they work with the program. And there is also kind of a complementing influence of the subtype on the dominant type, in the sense that, well, think of it almost like different shadings or different flavors, changes in flavors. if you have a sympathetic dominant who is also a fast oxidizer, then you have a double acidic influence on metabolism. The sympathetic system is producing an acid influence, and the fast oxidative sub-influence is also producing an acidic influence. So you have a double acid influence going on there. There's really no counterbalance happening with the subdominant system. And so in terms of characteristics that that person could produce or manifest in terms of personality, behavior, or energy patterns, or any of those types of characteristics, you will definitely get a much stronger tendency towards a hyperactive manifestation. So someone who is a strong sympathetic fast, and for those of you who are experienced in metabolic typing and have worked with lots of clients, when you've run into those sympathetic fast individuals, generally speaking, and this is a broad generalization, but generally speaking, they're very difficult to work with because their minds are so driven by that acidic influence. They tend to be hyper, they tend to be nervous, they tend to be irritable, they tend to get angry easily, they tend to have thoughts that happen too quickly, they can't shut their mind off, they jump from one thing to another. It's very difficult for them to start a project and finish it because their mind is just being pushed around by that acidic influence. So in that sense, the subdominant type has an underlying influence that can attenuate or exacerbate the influences from the dominant system. Sorry for that answer. That was a little bit too long, but
let it flow. I think I might be having this recorded. I asked my buddy Vin to record it, and so we could listen to it over again. And so sympathetic fast is a pain in the neck, is what you're saying. And you can have them be quiet, but don't marry them.
Yeah.
Hello, Bill. I asked that question. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Right. I asked that question, and it was asked by a client of mine, and I haven't really thought about it until I think that's the answer, like you just did. Basically, if I take myself, I am actually a fast oxidizer, very strong, and my subdominant is sympathetic, and it's a bit of an issue when I'm menstruating because I seem to switch from my usually ravenous appetite changes, and I no longer have a real need for food, and meat becomes I love meat, but it becomes repulsive to an extent, and I was just wondering how I could not without taking myself too out of balance as a fast oxidizer, but yet still, and that's why I thought I wondered where my sympathetic subdominance came in, and if I'm actually slipping over, at my lenses, basically. So, yeah.
That's a really great question, and it illustrates some pretty deep elements of our metabolic typing understanding and philosophy. You are what we might refer to as a circadian variable,
mm-hmm.
type, that is based entirely upon your hormonal system and how that is functioning in terms of your circadian rhythm. So you absolutely should treat yourself as a variable type.
Mm.
So the moment that you begin to feel that shift coming on,
yeah.
change your diet accordingly. So
okay.
switch over from the high protein, high fat, low carb foods. Switch over to the opposite types of foods, and also
mm-hmm.
Switch over with the ratios, and just fine-tune yourself the way you would do with any client.
Mm-hmm.
The earlier you catch it, the better off you'll be. Think of
mm-hmm.
it like a pendulum that swings, from left to right. It could be just a little swing to the left, a little swing to the right, or it could be a huge swing to the left and then a huge swing to the right. So what you want to do is catch yourself at the earliest opportunity. So the
mm-hmm.
swings become very small. You don't swing way out one way and then way out the other way, and you don't suffer symptomatically from the swings that take place. You simply support your body with those swings that are taking place to keep yourself hovering around that balance point the best way that you can. So it may take you a few cycles to kind of nail this down. And
mm-hmm.
what you want to look for, like with any variable client that you work with, what you want to look for are your particular signs and symptoms. What they are for you could be completely unique to you. The most memorable one that I had was a true variable type. And this woman, and it wasn't hormonally related, she was just a true variable type. And her first symptom that she got was a pain in her right earlobe. And when she figured that out, she was able to really make a huge difference in her variable nature and eventually get rid of it altogether, because she would catch herself at very early stages of that swing. And by doing that and keeping her body in a relatively balanced position, where those pendulum swings were very small instead of extreme, her body learned to retrain itself to manage those homeostatic mechanisms so that those swings did not take place. So in your case, you know, just really pay attention. I recommend you keep a little journal and just write down any symptom that comes up that's new, that you recognize, well, that's strange, why is it out there, that shouldn't be there. So anything that is new and out of the ordinary, as you start nearing that time period, write that down and then watch the following month if the same kind of symptom happens. So identify whatever those symptoms are that are unique for you and then begin to treat yourself accordingly.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I need to add this in here, as I find it really fascinating, Bill, that you mentioned the circadian variable. And Chloe, you remember what your nighttime cortisol was when we looked at that? It's like 5.2. I hope you don't mind I share this, but I think it's important. Chloe has a really high nighttime cortisol, as high as I've seen. So that's a matching sign in her circadian rhythm that we checked with the cortisol levels. And really explains a lot, because I've been looking at that. And, you know, the first thing that I would think of is, oh, a parasite or, you know, a bacterial infection or something like that. Well, we know that that's not the only reason you could have high nighttime cortisol. Matter of fact, Dodi, when I was talking to you, I met with you not too long ago before I started the course, and you mentioned reasons why nighttime cortisol would be high. Do you see where I'm going with that? And you had some other reasons why nighttime cortisol would be high too, right?
Right. But I was just thinking, in this particular instance, when was she tested? Because obviously the symptoms also start with a rise in estrogen and a drop in progesterone. So could it be that, what were her estrogen and progesterone readings like?
Well, I could tell you that her estrogen was high and her progesterone was low.
So could it be that once you start to normalize the estrogen to progesterone ratio, that swing will be much less exaggerated?
I think that's right on the money, Dodi, because what we know about variable types, whether they are linked to a woman's hormonal cycles or any male or female for any other reason, what we know about them is that there is obviously causal factors that are producing that, and when they actually manifest, when a variable type is there, that is a definite sign that the body is losing or has lost a certain degree of homeostatic control, because a person should not become a variable type. That is not a normal metabolic type to be. So then the question is, all right, fine, the variable type exists, it has causal factors, so now the question is, what is the cause of producing a variable type? And the answer is that it could be any stressors. It's that old analogy that we keep talking about in FDN, we talk about in metabolic typing, the analogy of the 2x4 laid between two sawhorses, and you start piling bricks on that 2x4, and at some point it's going to start to crack, and at some point if you keep piling the bricks on, it's going to break altogether. So those bricks are the stressors. Those bricks are the blocking factors. So we need to go after all the blocking factors that we can and eliminate them. And very possibly, in Chloe's case, and time will tell, we will see what happens, but very possibly it could be internal stressors that have depleted adrenal function, that have destroyed that have created the imbalance in the normal pathways and stimulated the preferential stress pathway and burned that in. It's just the whole syndrome that FDN is presenting, that could be the cause of the variable type manifestation. So as that changes, as the normal pathway functions are restored, and as adrenal function improves and adrenal efficiency improves, and thereby begins to regulate homeostatically more efficiently all those influences in the body that the adrenals control, then that could be the stressor that, once removed, allows that variable type metabolism to disappear and for Chloe to just function normally throughout that menstrual cycle.
Yeah, very well said. And I just wanted to add one other thing. In my research, I have read that when estrogen rises, cortisol rises because the body sees it as a stress. So perhaps, Reed, that is why the cortisol is high, because of that stressor.
Well, I think that we'll keep our eye on that. Chloe is a very willing student. She's done everything right as far as doing the testing and getting her clients to do the testing. She's really enthusiastic, and we're all learning a lot through cases like this. And it's either that or it's the salsa dancing, Chloe.
I've had my first period since taking the DHEA and pregnenolone, and it's the best period I've ever had. Well, in years. It's just been I ticked all boxes really as pluses. So it's a good result so far.
I'm very happy to hear that.
Me too.
And yeah, so we'll keep our eye on it. Keep your notes. I think what Bill said and what I ask my clients to do is just take some notes. You know, it's kind of hard if I talk to you every 2 weeks and you're kind of telling me, well, this or that. You know, you don't really have good notes, and you'll find out why you have that high nighttime cortisol and why your metabolic type seems, you know, you're operating as a variable, is what I heard Bill say. But you're not, you know, genetically there are no variables. Is that would that clarify that, Bill, or confuse?
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
There's no genetic variable types. It's a functional type, right?
That's correct.
So that's awesome.
So, Chloe, if you wouldn't mind, if you keep attending these Friday sessions, if you discover any of these particular signs that you have after a few months and can report back to us, that'd be really great. It'd be wonderful to hear.
Yes.
The experiences of a real, true dyed-in-the-wool variable.
Okay.
So, here's another question, and I think Jody is a good person to contribute to this question, and it has a lot to do with the way healthcare is practiced today. You know, and it's no better in England. Here in the United States, we have HMOs, which is your basic healthcare. I call it HMO because it's kind of goofy. And in England, they have the National Health Services, right? The NHS, something like that. And it's just as bad in the sense that, you know, they really just treat symptoms. And, you know, in my, if y'all have seen my brain body diagram little video, you know, I talk about that pills and surgery, you know, people like to treat symptoms. And then when it gets bad enough, they just take the parts out. Well, David Brassey from England has written and said that it's really bad over there with the amount of hysterectomies that are going on. I mean, just the first sign of, you know, lumps or bumps, you know, endometriosis, fibroids or something, you know, just the fastest, quickest, maybe it's the cheapest way, I don't know, but they're just going ahead and taking parts out, and they're not even considering, you know, what's the cause, or, you know, where are these hormonal imbalances coming from. Obviously, that's a big thing behind metabolic typing and functional diagnostic nutrition, is getting people to look at the causes. And you get down to the nitty-gritty of it, and we know that estrogen is when it's out of balance with progesterone, can cause harm. And it's evidenced, I think, real poignantly when we looked at the effects of hormone replacement therapy when prescriptions for synthetic estrogen, like Premarin, that kind of a thing, even when combined with synthetic progesterone, it was carcinogenic. Women were getting breast cancer and endometriosis, fibroids, also blood clots, blood clots can go into the brain and cause strokes and things like that. They're even attributing dementia and that kind of thing to the dominance of estrogen, and especially if it's a synthetic. So, our thoughts, John Lee was the guy who came out in the 90s and started saliva testing, saying that, well, natural progesterone was the best antagonist for estrogen. In other words, to counteract the estrogen dominance. And, Dodie, I just thought I'd ask you about that, because you're very knowledgeable in, like, on a personal level maybe or something. What's been your experience with just using progesterone to counteract estrogen?
I guess the first thing and the important thing is that it does work, but the diet really has to go along with it, and the diet has to be a good diet, because progesterone won't work that well without a good diet. It just it gets destroyed very easily. So no question, they need the balance between the two. But I've also seen with people using pregnenolone as well can be very useful. And some women take both pregnenolone and progesterone, and that works very well. But I agree with you totally. What is happening is that we are using surgery to solve the problems, both in the States and in the UK, because it's more lucrative for the medical profession. So they make more money on surgery than they do on replacement hormones. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the reasons why everybody is recommended to use it. And Sherry Dixon, mm-hmm. who is our metabolic type person in the UK, had that experience herself.
Wow.
And learned a lot from that. So she has real lifetime experience. And once she got on some progesterone, mm-hmm. her body started to balance out after she had a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
So there's no question. And, estrogen is a toxic. It destroys oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And it stimulates the adrenals to make more cortisol and more adrenaline. So it really, if it becomes dominant at all, it affects the whole body, and including men. Because as men get older, they get more and more estrogen proportionately to testosterone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that, definitely. And the question that I might have, because we've been using, we notice in the testing and that DHEA is really low. And, maybe that's why the pregnenolone supplement, because pregnenolone part of it converts into DHEA. But we've used DHEA a lot in our protocols, Dodie, as you know.
Yeah.
And yet, so in a person who has or is concerned with, estrogen-driven pathology, such as breast lumps or bumps and fibroids and things, that those we consider estrogen-driven. And so, yet we know their DHEA is really low, and we'd want to otherwise use DHEA. Would you say it's contraindicated, or would you not give it to them and only work with the progesterone?
Or that's a very good question, and I think the way you all use DHEA is really good, because you use very small doses. Because if you drive too much DHEA, you end up by increasing estrogen, which you may not want to do.
Right.
So that's why I've seen the pregnenolone and the progesterone combined with people who have pathology. They already have the symptoms. They already have the problem. I find that those two work better. I haven't used a lot of DHEA in the past, so I'm not sure. You've had more experience with that. But I think there's nothing wrong with using both pregnenolone and progesterone.
Yeah, we totally agree with that. And again, I've been using DHEA for a long time with the we'll call it the pre you know, you only if we've done the testing. Like if someone comes to me and says, hey, what do you think about DHEA? I mean, this stuff's on the shelves here. You know, you read all kinds of stuff that's might be just written by the people who sell DHEA, you know. So what I say is you have to do the testing. You got to run the 205 or the 201 and some kind of a test before you start using hormones. And then you get at least an educated look at, you know, trying to restore the pathways. And you're right, we use very, very gentle, I call it just a very mild amount.
Right.
Of these things.
Oh, sorry to interrupt. Hi, Reid, it's David here.
Hey, David.
Thanks for reading my question. That's great. Just to reiterate, I mean, the question that I sent to you, there's a bit of a referral sort of system going on here in that I've had a few ladies sort of hear about what we're doing and I've basically done exactly as you've described, you know, working on progesterone and using pregnenolone.
Mm-hmm.
And the results have been fantastic. But my concern was anything that overstimulates estrogen. But they're suffering from low estrogen symptoms because of tamoxifen and the other drugs that they're taking to keep estrogen down. So that was really my concern, that obviously we're working against drugs here, but also we've got the symptoms.
Well, if you have, I'm with you 100%. And if you're working with a woman with breast cancer, You know, that's between her and her oncologist, and, you know, we're not trying to treat cancer or, you know, we don't treat anything. All we can do is look at her hormones, and if she's on an estrogen antagonist like tamoxifen, which, you know, suppresses the harmful nature of the estrogen, I think it suppresses the estrogen receptors, and that's, again, between her and her physician. We just stay out of that, but you can still help. It's the way that we look at hormones is it's just another piece of the puzzle that you can restore balance to. The hormones that we use are perfectly natural. They're bioidentical. Your body already has them and makes them. And I look at it very much as though we were just working with any other piece of the puzzle. For instance, the oxidative system. That's a big piece of the puzzle, we'd all agree. The oxidative system, there's fast, there's slow, there's mixed in between. And if you wanted to help a person, you'd have to know what their oxidative rate is, and then you could help them shift towards balance, or at least balance within their oxidative system. So it's the same thing with the sympathetic versus parasympathetic nervous system. There's another huge piece of the puzzle. You're just trying to create some balance within their dominant, and it's just like that with the hormones. We're not doing therapy for, you know, I don't even consider it hormone therapy. It's just a little gentle balancing act. It's no different than what Dodie just said. She said, you know, you got to start with a good diet. Well, why? What makes up that diet? Well, it's certain foods, and then it's certain ratios of protein, fat, and carbohydrates. To create this balance, you know, strengthen the weak side kind of thing. It's just the exact same thing with these hormones. It's just a piece of the puzzle. You're not treating a disease. Does that make sense to everybody? Just I kind of
yeah,
want to maybe do
yeah.
it in perspective. Bill, does that work for you?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's an excellent parallel in terms of how we do what we do within metabolic typing, how it's identical really to what we are trying to do with the FDN work and the hormones. With the hormones, we really are not in any way trying to do hormone replacement therapy. We're not trying to give hormones for a particular symptom per se. What we're trying to do is restore viability to the normal pathway, remove the underlying stressors that have forced the body into the preferential pathway, which in so doing and creating that pregnenolone steel is creating the deficiencies and the imbalances in the hormones. So we're just trying to balance the body chemistry in the steroidal hormone pathways in the same way that we're trying to balance body chemistry in the autonomic and the oxidative fundamental control systems. So these are all control systems, and we're simply trying to balance those So as FDNs, when you are looking at test results and you are looking at the possible products to utilize, I think it would be very helpful to you to just really study that pathways chart and compare that to what you are seeing in those test results. For example, and then utilize the layering technique that we're creating and presenting to you. For example, if you're dealing with a woman who is estrogenic, meaning that she has estrogen levels that are too high and producing symptoms as a result, and she's estrogen dominant, and you look at the test results and you see a strong pregnenolone steel, and you look at progesterone and you see that progesterone is very low because of that steel, meaning that the pregnenolone is going to progesterone and progesterone is going to cortisol, and that progesterone is being used up entirely, then from a layering standpoint, it would make no sense to use DHEA, at least not to use it first. Because DHEA does what? It goes directly and converts to estrogen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And progesterone works in opposition to estrogen. So you have two things going for you now. You know that progesterone works in opposition to estrogen, and you have the black and white objective test results right there in front of you, which shows the progesterone is low. So from that standpoint, thinking in terms of, okay, how do we balance body chemistry? How do we support the normal function of the steroidal hormone pathways? It would make logical sense to start with layering some progesterone in there. By doing that, you are blocking the need for pregnenolone to be stolen away to raise cortisol. So you're providing progesterone at that point and hopefully meeting the needs for cortisol. And then you can add some pregnenolone in to begin to support the other pathway. So progesterone and pregnenolone in that order would make the most sense, in my opinion, in terms of a woman who is known to be estrogen dominant and producing a lot of estrogen dominant symptoms. Would you agree with that, Reed, or does that not make sense?
Yeah, no, that's what, you know, we've been talking about that and the sequencing of the hormones, and you're perfectly right. I couldn't say it better, so I won't try.
So, yeah, the only point is, you know, we're not doing hormone replacement therapy. We're trying to balance body chemistry using the old phrase from metabolic typing. We're trying to do the same thing with FDN. You know, we're just trying to normalize the body function, just like Reed has been saying.
Mm-hmm. And, Jody, I'm sure you'd concur with that. You've been in. You know exactly.
Absolutely.
How. Yeah. Well, that's cool. Now, I have another question. It has to do with the effects of certain nutrients that we all seem to hear are really good things. Like, so Bill, I'm going to ask you to, you know, there's a general question about, let's take CoQ10 for instance. We're all told CoQ10, you know, that's a great antioxidant for the heart and different areas of the body, and, you know, everyone should use it. And as MT advisors, you know, when we hear the word, oh, everyone should use it, you know, we're afraid that, well, someone's just selling you something, you know. So are there safe nutrients? Let's take CoQ10 and say, you know, is that safe for all types, Bill? And then in the comment on how do we know from one of these, you know, the CoQ10 and vitamin C and all these things, how do we know which way it's going to, just make it a comment about that.
Well, there are some nutrients, and CoQ10 is one of them, which really do not have a specific effect on the fundamental control systems that we work with. There are not a lot of nutrients that are like that. Most vitamins and minerals have specific stimulatory or inhibitory influences on one side or other of our fundamental control systems that determine metabolic types. In other words, many vitamins and minerals can either stimulate or inhibit sympathetic output or stimulate or inhibit parasympathetic output and so forth. But CoQ10 really is not in that category. It does not specifically stimulate or inhibit one side or other of the autonomic or oxidative systems. It functions as a transporter of electrons in the mitochondria, and it also has antioxidant properties. It's an excellent antioxidant. So anytime you can use an antioxidant, you can use safely CoQ10 in terms of the metabolic types. The one instance where you would want to think twice about using any antioxidants would be in someone who is anaerobic dominant. Now, that's one of the other control systems, the aerobic, anaerobic, or catabolic, anabolic balance, which we don't deal with in the advanced program. But someone who has an anaerobic imbalance, maybe a cancer tumor, which is an anaerobic acid pain type tumor, you would not want to give them a lot of antioxidants. You would just be feeding that tumor. You'd be feeding the environment that is conducive to the growth of that cancer. But in terms of the autonomic and oxidative systems, CoQ10 is fine. And for anybody else who does not have a specific anaerobic or aerobic imbalance, or rather anaerobic imbalance, CoQ10 is fine. Cool. If you have questions about those nutrients in specific instances, always feel free to contact me or even just look on the labels of our metabolic typing products. Those have the nutrients that are specifically supportive of the different aspects of our metabolic types.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Here's another question. Actually, it has to do with the protocols. Like in FDN, I've always said, you know, 90-day therapeutic protocol. The reason I came up with 90 days was I just, over some years, found that if someone wants to see good changes, they shouldn't expect anything real fast. So 90 days just became kind of a minimum requirement. Because the question that came in was, you know, what do you do after the 90 days? You know, Reed, you're sending out, you know, your clients a 90-day therapeutic protocol. Well, then what? You know, do they just stop all the hormone drops and things like that? And the answer is no, you don't stop anything. You continue with what works for the client, and that requires them to be checking in with you and often retesting. So I will run a 201, you know, recheck the cortisol rhythm, do the morning, noon, afternoon, nighttime cortisol, you know, saliva samples. Look at the total. You get everything that's on the front page of the 205 when you do that. The 205, as you know, also has the second page, which has the other five hormones, the estradiol, estriol, progesterone, testosterone, and melatonin. Well, if I do a 205, and I always do a 205 in my intake, and then that person will follow some protocol, but when I retest, you know, if their estradiol, estriol, progesterone, testosterone, melatonin all looked just fine, you know, I may or may not need to see that again. So, but I will run a 201 at 90 days just to make sure things are improving and headed in the right direction. You want some kind of a backup for your protocol. Often it's not enough to just hear from the client that, oh, I feel great, everything's fantastic. Like, you know, Chloe just said this morning, hey, that's the best menstrual cycle she's had in years, even though she's only a kid. You know, she's very well aware of her body. She can tell that the protocol is working, and you're going to hear that from your clients too. So I retest, and no, there's no reason to quit after 90 days, especially if it's working real well. It would be like saying, it'd be just like saying, eat a metabolic typing diet for 3 months, and then go back to however you used to eat. It just doesn't work. Once you find something that really works for you, you're going to keep going with it. The only difference would be that with the hormones, you since you do retest, you might cut back a little bit. They may not need as much DHEA, for instance, but if they've restored the metabolic pathway between pregnenolone and DHEA, and the whole point is to restore that pathway, get the body making its own DHEA again. That's the theory. And I've seen it work. Well, it worked in myself. My DHEA came back up to just about normal. And now, you know, I use it from time to time. I kind of cycle my use of DHEA. But that's the whole idea. Does that answer your, I'm not sure, I don't remember who asked the question, but if you're on the line, if that answers your question, good. If not, speak up.
Reed, this is Bill.
Hi.
I think also that at the end of 90 days or so, FDMs could make good use of the adrenal stress index questionnaire and have a client fill that out, and that's a way for the client to really focus on how much change has taken place for themselves, because it's really hot. I'm sure most of you have observed the fact that when people do the metabolic typing program, after a period of time and they've improved, they don't really remember how they used to be. You might mention a symptom to them. They say, oh, yeah, I forgot all about that. I forgot I used to have those headaches or whatever they are. So by filling out an adrenal stress index questionnaire, you can see, number one, how much they've changed, and the client can see that, too, and feel really good about that. But also they'll see what's left over. You know, they'll see all their other symptoms that have not been totally cleared up, and that will be a motivation for them to really get retested and keep working with you on getting everything resolved. And also the hormone check record, I would definitely have them fill that out as well at the end of 3 months and see what shows up. If nothing shows up, that's a really good thing, but there may be some things that are showing up in that as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the hormone check record, I've been using that for the initial period, you know, the first few weeks, let's say, while they're doing the layering, just to get them to pay attention. It's like, you know, fill that out so that we know if the layering's working. You know, they're going to layer in their hormones one at a time with very small doses and very small incremental increases. And that way they can catch, you know, that's that built-in troubleshooting mechanism. If you start with one hormone at a time, one drop at a time, and slowly increase it, and then add the next hormone that you're going to be using, or actually it works with any product, then you know where the culprit is. The built-in troubleshooting's right there, as opposed to if they just started taking everything and then they had an adverse reaction, you'd have to, you know, goof around, and most clients aren't going to abide by, you know, let's say they start taking 3-4 different products or hormone all at once, and then they're having an adverse reaction, and you ask them to, well, cut this out or cut that out. You're going to be guessing at what might have caused it. They won't abide by that. They'll leave you. They'll think you don't know what you're doing. So the layering technique's perfect for that. And the hormone check sheets are how I get them to pay attention to, you know, oh, all of a sudden this happened when I added the drops of DHEA, let's say. And then you're right, the ASI, especially the ASI sheet, and, you know, we've gotten quite a few back now where they might have had on their ASI a total of 300 points, and then after 1 month, they've only got 200 points. So obviously, they've made improvements. And then, you know, at the end of 2 months and at the end of 3 months, and then that might be what they do instead of retesting. So I don't make everybody retest. If they're just doing fantastic, it depends on what hormones they're using. But let me add this, too, to that conversation. The whole reason I ask, my basic intake is to know what is your main complaint. If I had a magic wand and could wave it over you and remove one health problem, you know, what is that one or two things? Because of what Bill said, they'll forget. You know, so you got to write that down at the top of your client notes. Main complaint, you know, tiredness, fatigue, low libido. Because a month down the road, you know, and you say, how are you doing? They go, well, you know, I've got this ache or pain, is some other thing, and you go, well, wait a minute, what about that tiredness, fatigue, and low? Oh, that's fine. I, you know, they just forget that they even had those things going on. But you better have addressed those main complaints.
Hey, Reed, it's Aubrey.
Hey, Aubrey.
How are you? I just wanted to make a quick comment, talking about, you know, symptoms and the hormones. Because for myself, you know, I've done all the tests, as you know, and I've been working with Reed for a while. And my symptoms were just stuck and not improving. And my last test that I had done was the allergen, the MRT.
Yeah.
And I tell you, after 3 weeks of being off the food that were causing an inflammatory effect in my body and toxins to be produced, it really leveled my hormones quite a bit. So that is such a huge piece, valuable piece, that I was actually waiting to the end, usually as a last resort to check people on allergies. Mm-hmm. But now I'm throwing it in there, you know, right away when I see some imbalances, because, you know, it can really change a person's whole outcome once they remove those toxic foods.
That's fantastic, and I'm really glad you put that in there. Aubrey is a MT advisor in Rhode Island, and she's really taken to FDN, and she's really running a lot of testing. Aubrey's doing the lectures and screenings and things. She's really helped use FDN, the tools, to help build her practice up. But also, you know, everyone who is a student of mine is also a client of mine. That's how I look at it. And you know, I don't mind sharing that Aubrey struggled with, you know, the protocol, is it your adrenal glands and things. And, you know, let's do the hormones and see. And, you know, we tend to want relief care. And that's the sort of the problem, you know, that we want that relief. And people and your clients are going to be like this. They're going to want to feel better within a couple of weeks, or they might want to give up. Well, with FDN, we're really focusing on the stress reduction. And obviously, you know, I've used this expression, you can't empty a bathtub when the water's still running. So Aubrey was doing the right things, but had not yet uncovered a major stressor and eliminated it yet. And so when Aubrey did the mediator release test, and Aubrey, you came up with some, you know, I mean, a lot of things that you probably were eating. I noticed that oats and wheat and even...
I was a fat oxidizer for 2 years, and thankfully I had just really switched as to a parasympathetic, just maybe 3 or 4 months. Actually, what switched me, I think, was by supporting the adrenals on the program we were doing, I started to balance a little bit, and I was a variable type, actually. I kept going back and forth between fast and balanced. And once we did the adrenal program, the profile with the pregnenol and the DHA, I was doing some progest. I actually started to stabilize as still a protein type, but I was in the parasympathetic range. It opened up my food categories a little bit. When we did the MRT test, I ended up being allergic, showing allergies to pretty much everything I had been eating.
Wow.
I was fast, you know, almost all the vegetables and a lot of different meat. So that was a challenge for me to then still remain as a protein type and figure out the new kinds of foods. I had to really start eating a lot more fish because I'm, you know, allergic to so much meat.
Yeah, your chicken, turkey, lamb were no good for you, and you were all told, turkey burger.
And that's primarily what I was eating, and a lot of, and thankfully I can still eat these. I just wanted to just point out, it's sometimes tough. You run into a lot of opposition, I have anyway, with clients who just, they don't want to go and spend the money on the test. And it's so important, and I stress it, and I have turned down going further with clients who just want to be, you know, quote-unquote treated for something that they don't even know what they have, and they don't want to do any testing. And, you know, since I've had the experiences with these tests, I don't work with clients anymore until they do the tests that they're recommended, because then it's really just guesswork.
Amen, sister. That's what we were trying to get across to people the whole time, and you totally got it. You know, people call me, it's like, okay, here's your test kits. You know, if without that information, you are guessing. If it's the same thing with the diet, they read, what should I be eating? Do the test. If it's a test, if you don't take it, I can't help you. Isn't it
right? Yeah, I just had a client I had to turn away because she actually spoke to a naturopathic doctor, and then it's just surprising to me, but the naturopathic doctor said, I've never heard of someone having to test for parasites. They just do a parasite cleanse.
So she comes,
she's like, I don't want to do the parasite test. She's got every sign as an infection. And I said, well, I can't help you anymore. You can go to that naturopathic doctor then. Good luck.
You're doing awesome. Awesome, Aubrey, and I'm glad to hear that you're also feeling better. And you've done at least 5 of these MRT tests for your clients month or so. So I know that you're doing the best work out there. You're really doing great. And
thanks for the support.
Well, you're welcome. And I'm very happy to refer to you out there too. And hope that's working out for you.
It's working out great, I'm happy to be on with these conference calls and everybody. I mean, I think everybody that's doing this work is doing such a good service to, the holistic health field. It's awesome.
Well.
So thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Aggie, did you have a question? I guess Aggie's not on the line right now. So listen, I want to encourage you.
I'm here.
Okay. No,
the question I emailed you?
Yeah, go ahead and ask because I don't have your email in front of me.
Okay. I have a client who's a recovering alcoholic, and she was concerned about the drugs, the alcohol and the drugs, that she's very afraid to use them.
Well, you know, maybe like Dodie, have you run across this? And Bill asked me this too. What about and a recovering alcoholic who's scared of the drops, I would encourage them probably to take the drops and just put them in water and it's not going to, I don't think it's going to kick off anything in their brain that makes them go get drunk because they did a 2 or 3 drops of alcohol mixed in water. But if they're really that paranoid, I would probably just have them go do an oral. They would just have to go to the store and buy some oral pregnenolone and DHEA and progesterone, or they could use the creams.
What, Reed? I heard there was a way to get rid of the alcohol. Bill, are you there?
Yeah.
What was that way that we used with the herbal extracts?
You just add hot water and let it stand, and it'll evaporate the alcohol.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. What do you do?
Can
you repeat that? What do you do?
You just add some hot water.
Okay.
Put the drops in a little bit of hot water and let it sit around for a little while, and that'll evaporate the alcohol.
Great. Now, I have a client.
I want to know, Reed, does hot water change the hormones in any way? I wouldn't imagine it would.
I would double the dose. If you have, let's say your client, what's going to be hard with if you haven't layered it in as an alcohol. Let's say you want somebody on 6 or 8 drops of pregnenolone. You'd have to double the dose if you make it an oral like that. That would be my sort of patented answer, you know, and this is according to Bill Timmons. If you want to change the sublinguals into an oral, that's fine for those that can't stand the alcohol. But you've got to double the amount because it's going to now go through digestive system and get some of it's going to get dissipated, so you got to double the dose. And why don't you try that, Aggie?
Okay.
Could you still use it as a sublingual even if you add a little hot water?
No, I would make it into. I would double the dose and make it an oral.
Okay.
And these hours are going by really fast. I do have an appointment to get to with a client, but I love these Friday morning things. Should we continue these, folks?
Yes.
It's working for me. Okay, and I want to really thank Bill and Dodie for both being on the line. That's fantastic. Dodie, you're really a big addition to the conversation. I really appreciate you bringing all your experience. And
thank you, and I enjoyed it too.
Yeah, I think we could learn a lot from each other, and we'll just keep going forward and doing what we do, which is helping people, you know, do naturopathic healing. And what better thing could we do? I think it's a great contribution to the world. I like having a purpose in my life. And I'll just add one more thing. That, you know, I listened to a Paul Check. I sat in on a Paul Check teleconference last week. And a lot of you are Czech practitioners, and I admire that very much. I really like Paul. I really never listened to him. You know, I've heard his people talk, and I know some of his practitioners. I see him at the different shows, and I've been to his booths here and there. But I never really talked to Paul personally. And I was really impressed with something that I probably should work on more myself. Like, I started this conversation with saying, you know, FDN and MT give me a purpose in life. Without a purpose in life, I don't think anyone can be truly happy. And Paul brings this to light a lot. He really talks about the spiritual aspect. And
there's many pastors,
you know,
for Sam.
I just want to emphasize that we, you know, I'm trying to get more that way myself, right? I'm not so wrapped up in just the mechanics of it all. You know, I mean, and that's basically what I am as a technician. I'd love to do the testing and look at the numbers and, yeah, correlate it with the client. And, oh, here's your DHEA and your, you know, or your fast oxidizer shifted this way and that. But there's a lot of people out there who, I think the reason they're so messed up is they don't have a purpose in life. And,
well, there's several different paths
trying to help someone.
Unix 20, which and, is a database server.
You think it's just a bunch of mechanics.
Showbiz,
you know, eat these foods and take these drops. I think that we're selling somebody short somewhere. Does that make any sense?
Well, I get
definitely.
I get the ones for SRD. So,